The following is a Sunday feast lecture given by His Holiness Jayapataka Swami on September 18, 1983 in Atlanta, Georgia.
Mukakuroti vachalang pangulang ngayate giring Yaki patamahang bande sri gurung dinatharinam. I offer my respectful obeisances unto the lotus feet of His Divine Grace Srila Abhoycharan Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada, who has opened my eyes from the darkness of ignorance with the torchlight of transcendental knowledge. So today is a very special day. It is the appearance or birthday of Lord Vamanadeva. According to the Vedic literatures, there God is one, and there are, however, unlimited forms that God has the potential to assume. That is known as ananta rupam, or an unlimited number of forms, of which there are especially 10 incarnations which are very highly celebrated or most well known. One of which is the dwarf incarnation of Godhead, known as Vamanadeva. I don't know if you can see. This is the picture of Vamanadeva, the dwarf incarnation. The Lord came as a dwarf, Brahmana, priest, and He went begging from His devotee, Bali Maharaj, in order to trick him to give everything that he had. Although he could just take everything, it's within his power, but it was his desire that it should be given willingly. So he came as a dwarf, Brahmana, or priest, and he is customary that a king would offer charity to a Brahmana, or the priestly class of person. So when he came, then he asked for a boon. So the king said that, what would you like? He said, I want only 3 steps of land. How much land I can cover in 3 steps? You just give me that, if it's within your power. Okay, he said, that's nothing. You take it. But why don't you ask for more? Why don't you ask for a village or for a city or for a kingdom? Why just 3 steps of land? I can give you thousands of cows, gold. You can build temples, anything. No, all I want is the area of land I can cover in 3 steps. So that is the basic promise that was made. The professional priest of Bali Maharaj, when he saw what was happening, advised Bali Maharaj, don't keep your promise. This is not an ordinary dwarf priest that has come here. This is, in fact, God Himself has come as a dwarf. And if you give Him what He wants, then He'll take everything. You won't be able even to give Him 3 steps. He said, how can I lie? So his professional priest was giving various reasons how he could lie, saying that And those aren't so important, of course. But he gave various reasons how to avoid. But Bali Maharaj, he refused. He said that you told me the whole life that I'm supposed to worship God. Here he's come right before me. And you're saying that because I promised him 3 steps of land, I shouldn't give it, because if I give it, he'll take everything. Well, if in fact this is God that's come here in disguise, I should give him anything he wants. Because it's our duty to give everything to God. So even though you're my spiritual master, I reject you. I keep my word. So one of the lessons which the spiritual master of Bali was trying to use to convince him that it's all right to lie, because if you don't lie, if in this case, if you deny it, even though you gave your word, then you'll save yourself. Because if you keep your word, ultimately you'll lose everything. And we need a body in order to do religious work. So this is the advice of his priest. Satyanga pushpa phalanga vidya atma vikshasya giyate vrikshe jiva titanna syat anritanga mulam atmana. Translation from Sanskrit. The Vedas enjoin that the factual result of the tree of the body is the good fruits and flowers derived from it. But if the bodily tree does not exist, there is no possibility of factual fruits and flowers. Even if the body is based on untruth, there cannot be factual fruits and flowers without the help of the bodily tree. This is very cryptic, so His Divine Grace Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada has explained, purport. He's our founder, His deity is there. This sloka explains that in relation to the material body, even the factual truth cannot exist without a touch of untruth. The Mayavadis say, Brahma Satyam Jagat Mithya. In other words, the spirit soul is truth and the external energy is untruth. The Vaishnava philosophers, however, do not agree with the Mayavada philosophy. Vaishnava philosophers, the Hare Krishna movement, are considered Vaishnavas. We believe in one personal God. And Mayavadas, that means that they are impersonalists. They believe that ultimately God is formless. So we don't agree with the Mayavada philosophy. Even if for the sake of argument the material world is accepted as untruth, a living entity entangled in the illusory energy cannot come out of it without the help of the body. Without the help of the body, one cannot follow a system of religion, nor can one speculate on philosophical perfection. Therefore, the flower and fruit, pushpa phalam, have to be obtained as a result of the body. Without the help of the body, the fruit cannot be gained. The Vaishnava philosophy therefore recommends yukta vairagya. It is not that all attention should be diverted for the maintenance of the body, but at the same time, one's bodily maintenance should not be neglected. As long as the body exists, one can thoroughly study the Vedic instructions, and thus at the end of life, one can achieve perfection. This is explained in Bhagavad Gita 8:6. Yam yam avapi smarang bhavam tyajatam te kalevaram. Everything is examined at the time of death. Therefore, although the body is temporary, not eternal, one can take from it the best service and make one's life perfect. So basically, there are two philosophies. One philosophy, as I mentioned, is a philosophy that there is ultimately a supreme being with a personal characteristic, form, qualities, pastimes, name, etc. The other philosophy is that the supreme truth is ultimately impersonal, some energy, some impersonal light or source. So for those who are the impersonal philosophers, they say that the spirit is true, that everyone has got the spirit, and that spirit is truth, but the whole material world is false. Therefore, you should renounce the material world and just accept the spiritual life as being real. But this is completely different from the philosophy of Krishna consciousness. Not completely, but it's basically different. In Krishna consciousness, we accept that the spirit is true, but that the material nature is not false. Nothing God creates is false. Everything He creates is also real, because He is real. So this material energy is also truth, but it's a temporary truth. Its form is not permanent. But the temporary truth can be utilized in order to achieve eternal truth. In other words, we can use the temporary body in order to achieve realization of our real nature, of our real self, of the Supreme Truth. So, this is done by a process called Yukta Vairagya. You see, the impersonal philosopher, they would go in Himalayas or in the forest, and they would perform different forms of yoga or impersonal speculation called Jnana Yoga, which is very difficult to perform. One would sit in one place on a kusa grass mat, staring at the tip of the nose, controlling the breath, controlling the eating, not eating too much, not eating too little, not sleeping too much, not sleeping too little, completely controlled, focusing the eyesight on the tip of the nose. They'll gradually control the thoughts and bring the inward breath into the outgoing breath, and this way they'll achieve a state called samadhi, or complete concentration. That takes many years of practice, maybe even an entire lifetime or more. It requires sitting exercises, breathing exercises, extreme patience. One has to completely dedicate oneself to that particular type of realization at the exclusion of everything else. So it's not a very practical system for the modern day and age. If people practice that, in the cities, of course, they're doing a few of the exercises, how to sit, mainly to keep good health and circulation, etc. But that is just the very basic. That's the first stage of the Eightfold Yoga system. The personalists, they follow the Vaishnava system of Ninefold Bhakti Yoga, based on hearing, chanting, remembering, praying, offering obeisances, rendering services, befriending the Lord, being a servant of the Lord, and surrendering everything to the Lord. So in that process, the system is called Yukta Vairagya. The body isn't neglected, neither is it simply made the goal of life to serve the body. The body is a vehicle to take us through life, ultimately to achieve complete perfection, to realize God, to realize the living force within the body. If we analyze what is the body, we find that the body itself has got no consciousness. Just like if we put a tourniquet on our arm, within a few moments you can hit the end of your arm and it will be senseless. That means by nature your body doesn't have any consciousness. In the Vedas it said, hideshedu natishtati, that the soul or living force is within the heart. And through the blood, the consciousness is spread throughout the entire body. So actually, when we cut off any part of the body from the connection by the bloodstream, it will lose consciousness. So the body itself is just a dead lump of flesh, skin, bone, bone marrow, fat, blood, mucus, and so on. It's just a very complex machine made by the material nature on the desire of God, and it is activated by the presence of a living force, which is an anti-material particle or a spiritual particle called the Jiva Atma in Sanskrit. Or you can say in English roughly a spirit soul or the self.
intimacy.
That self never dies. It's indestructible. It's indivisible. It can't be burned. It can't be wet. It is completely beyond any material level of existence. It's smaller than an molecule. It is like one spiritual atom. In its most subtle and dormant state. So when that is fully activated, that's called self-realization. At that time, the full potential of that soul, that spiritual atom, is manifested. In material life, just a portion of it is manifested. So the human body is a very special body, because compared to other forms of life, according to the Vedic understanding, there are 8,400,000 species of life, which are divided basically into aquatics, immovable objects like trees, etc., into birds, reptiles, birds, animals, and finally human species. And the soul transmigrates or reincarnates and taking on these various, through these various species. The species are already there. They don't evolve. Darwin's theory of evolution has no basis in the Vedic understanding. It's a complete concoction. According to the Vedic understanding, the seeds of each species are already there, given by God, and they develop within their own category. They don't transform into a new type of character, but the soul, the living force, that will go on between one form to the next. So finally, when we, the spirit, achieve a human body, at that time we have our maximum potential of spiritual understanding. That time we can actually expand our consciousness to really understand who we are and who God is. But an animal, a reptile, a bird, they don't have the same potential. So this body, if it's used simply to maintain itself, simply for eating, simply for material sense gratifications, that's considered to be practically a misuse of the valuable intelligence of a human being. It's practically using it as an animal would. That the actual intelligence of the human being is meant to understand the subtle difference between matter and spirit. Having understood the difference between matter and spirit, then one will lead a life which will be balanced between material maintenance of our body and our family and spiritual realization. That is called yukta vairagya, or renunciation by utilization of our maximum potential, as compared to complete renunciation as is practiced by the impersonal yogis. So, basically, the spiritual master of Bali Maharaj was telling him that you need a body. If you give everything to God, then you won't have a body left. So then how you perform religion? Therefore, you should take back your promise. Of course, Bali Maharaj didn't accept all this logic, because he too had the basic faith that if I give everything to God, then I won't be the loser, since he's personally come before him. So, subsequently, there's another prayer which describes about the nature of surrendering to Krishna. Because Bali Maharaj, his fame, today, the appearance day that we're celebrating, the great devotee, is one of the 12 great authorities on bhakti yoga or devotional service. Bali Maharaj, the king who was delivered by Vamana Dev, the dwarf incarnation of Godhead, many millions of years ago. So Bali Maharaj, he was the example of completely surrendering to God. So I'd just like to read a verse here from the Srimad Bhagavatam, which describes this point. Madiyam mohimanam cha param brahmeti sabditam vetsasyanu grihitam me samprasnayar vivitam hridi. Translation. You will be thoroughly advised and favored by me, and because of your inquiries, everything about my glories, which are known as Param Brahma, will be manifest within your heart. Thus you will know everything about me. Explanation by Bhaktivedanta Swami. As stated in Bhagavad Gita 15:15, Sarvasya Chaham Hirisani Visto Matasmitir Ganamapohanam Cha. The Supreme Personality of Godhead Param Atma is situated in everyone's heart, and from him come remembrance, knowledge, and forgetfulness. Reveals himself in proportion to one's surrender to him. Ye yata maam prapadyante tams tataiva vajamyaham. In responsive cooperation, the Lord reveals himself in proportion to one's surrender. That which is revealed to one who fully surrenders is different from what is revealed to one who surrenders partially. Everyone naturally surrenders to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, either directly or indirectly. The conditioned soul surrenders to the laws of nature in material existence. But when one fully surrenders to the Lord, material nature does not act upon him. Such a fully surrendered soul is favored by the Supreme Personality of Godhead directly. Mam eva ye prapadyante, mayam etam tarantite. One who has fully surrendered to the Lord has no fear of the modes of material nature, for everything is but an expansion of the Lord's glories. And these glories are gradually revealed and realized. The Lord is the Supreme Purifier, Param Brahma, Param Dhamma, Pavitram, Paramam Bhavan. From the Bhagavad Gita. The more one is purified and the more he wants to know about the Supreme, the more the Lord reveals to him. Full knowledge of Brahman, Paramatma, and Bhagavan is revealed to the pure devotees. The Lord says in Bhagavad Gita, quote, out of compassion for them, I, dwelling in their hearts, destroy with the shining lamp of knowledge the darkness born of ignorance. Teshang evanukam partang aham agyanajam tama nasayam yatma vavasto gyanadipena vasvata. So basically what's being said is that whether we like it or not, we're all forced to surrender to God, either directly or indirectly. Because the material nature, the material energy is one of the extensions or energies of God. So everyone in the material world is being forced to act according to material laws. When our body is hungry, we have to feed it. When we want to feel something, then we'll run after that. When we want to taste something, we'll run after that. In various ways, we're forced to serve the material nature. So in effect, we're also surrendering to God, but that's indirect. That's without any God consciousness. But we are forced to serve in one way or another. But if rather a person directly recognizes that the material nature is a product of God, of Krishna, and that ultimately he's the controller of everything and he's our eternal master, so we should serve him. That surrender frees one from the mechanical control of the material nature and puts one directly under the shelter of the Supreme Lord. That is considered the liberated state. Jivan mukta sa uchite. So the choice is there for every conditioned soul in the material world. We are originally unconditioned souls, but we have somehow or another become entangled in this material world and taken on various type of material coverings. So it's our choice whether we want to purify our consciousness and return back to our original spiritual consciousness, or if we want to maintain our conditional life in the material world, suffering, disease, old age, death, and again rebirth in our next life. So the choice is there. For those who actually surrender to the Supreme Lord, then he reveals himself, his inner secrets. And those who are indirectly surrendering under the material nature, of course it's not a purposeful or a willing surrender, it's being forced just by the laws of nature. For them, the real form of the Supreme Lord is always a mystery. It is always kept a secret. So today in the world we find that there are so many nations, and these nations are all claiming that their country is theirs. This is America, now someone else is claiming this is Russia, someone else is claiming this is China, someone else saying this is India. And then in the whole world there's so many various type of national interests which are conflicting with each other, creating wars, creating hot, cold wars, economic differences, and so on. So this is basically due to an illusory idea that the human being is the proprietor, that ultimately God is the proprietor of everything. And the any nation is simply a caretaker. 200 years ago, there was not America here, there was a place of Red Indians. Before them, who knows who was here? You see, now we claim this is America. We don't know 50 years from now what this place will be. You see, but the land is always here. You see, that is given by the Supreme Lord. So ultimately, if the whole world took that attitude that the real proprietor is not the individual national interest, but is ultimately the Supreme Lord. And if everyone recognized that they were ultimately the servant of the Supreme Lord, and that therefore all other living beings are of the same spiritual quality, and should be working for the same supreme interest and the interest of all the part and parcels of the Supreme Lord, then you could actually have one peaceful world. There could actually be a unity on the basis of real spiritual knowledge and understanding. In the Vedic time, we find that at that time, the whole world was under one administration. And at that time, there was actually a peaceful and harmonious situation, as much as can be experienced in the human species. So in any case, this is the basic peace formula given in the Bhagavad Gita, that if people actually recognize that the Supreme Lord is the proprietor of everything, he may be known by different names as the Father of Jesus, or as Allah, or as Krishna, in different countries and different places. But ultimately there's one Supreme Lord, and he's the real proprietor. And if real spiritual knowledge about the identity of all the living entities is understood, then there can actually be a universal harmony established. Otherwise, the present materialistic society does not hold any hope open to create any kind of lasting peace in the world. Because by the very definition, every group of material bodies is in competition with every other group. And sooner or later, that competition gets hot enough that a war breaks out. And then now war means nuclear war in many cases. Right now there are 40 wars going on in the world, according to latest statistics I heard. But all it takes is one nuclear war to turn this whole society and civilization upside down. So the real solution can easily be achieved if actual spiritual understanding is propagated. The sectarian religions like Christianity and Muhammad, they're fighting in Beirut. The sectarian religions of Hinduism and Muslim, they're fighting in India and Bangladesh and Pakistan. The Buddhists and the Hindus are fighting in Sri Lanka. The Protestants and the Catholics are killing each other in Ireland. None of this is based upon scriptural or real spiritual understanding. It is due to some materialistic conception of caste and sect. So the actual message of the Bhagavad Gita is that real religion is not simply a dogma, but it is a science of what is the self, what is the supreme being, and what is our factual relationship. Which should be the primal goal of science, to actually substantiate that, rather than try to prove that there is no God. Rather, if they try to prove the presence and existence of a spirit soul in the body of an antimaterial particle, that would be their real credit. That could be proved. Whether or not they can prove God, that's a different thing. But they can prove the existence of a soul through so many different inferences. Understanding that equality of the spirit soul between different bodies and ultimately the supreme proprietorship of God, then there can be the only hope for a worldwide unity and peace. So Bali Maharaj today, of course, is his day of triumph because he surrendered to God, and in surrendering to God then he achieved all perfection. Although it seemed like a defeat at first, but in fact for him it was the greatest triumph, and that's why we observe today as a very special holiday. We thank you all for coming here. We had a slideshow of a festival that we held in July 12th in Calcutta. Is it set up? In the meantime, I can ask if there are any questions. Hare Krishna. Yes? One of the verses we read today. Well, if you have that acute of memory, then you would be guaranteed the success by chanting that one mantra. But most people aren't able to maintain that kind of train of thought. The Bhagavad Gita describes yang yang vapi smarang bhavam tyajadante kalibaram. That at the time of death, whatever you think about, wherever your mind, your conscience is situated, that destination you will achieve as your next birth. So normally you chant, you'll get a benefit for that, but subsequently your mind will go different places. So if one is in the habit of chanting every day, then it's very easy that at the time of death you can fix your mind on Krishna and God, and then you'll achieve God. If a person, for instance, is thinking of his girlfriend at the time of death, then the next body he'll get will be a girl's body. And if the girl is thinking of her boyfriend, then she'll get a man's body. So if you think of God, then you go back to God. You see, that's why the information on the factual identity or the nature and nomenclature of the Supreme Lord is given for the advanced transcendentalists, so that they can fix their mind on a concept of the Supreme Lord which will not be imaginative, which will be complete and pure. The whole universe.
Supposedly is the sole owner. That was a Would it be a contradiction to allow private property in America and yet at the same time recognize that God is the sole owner of the
world? You see, God is not only the owner because he creates the world. You see, according to the Vedas, that there is nothing but God. That ultimately there only is God, but he is within everything and he's outside of everything at the same time. That actually this material world, the universe, the millions of universes in the material world, beyond that, that's just a fraction of his total energy. There's a complete spiritual universe which has many times bigger than the total material universes. And this is all an extension of his own energy. He was one, just like the sun, and then he expands sunlight. And from the sunlight, then just like water vapor comes and creates clouds and so on. So ultimately everything is an extension of God's energy. And when he wants to, he winds it all back inside himself again. And then it's only him. And then he puts it out again, in as far as the material world. So he gives a code for humankind. In other words, people in the material world, they're going to have a certain consciousness. And he already understands that every person has got certain rights for maintaining their body and soul together. To do that, they have to have a livelihood, they have to function. And so in the code book of Manu, which is the basis of many of the legal systems in the world, the Manu Samhita, there it describes that proprietorship of land is allowed under certain conditions. Otherwise, people won't take any responsibility. Yeah, but that proprietorship is not really, in a real sense, is as you said, it's just a lease.